Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. Thank you so much for your lovely comments about last week's episode. I really loved talking to Angela. She was such a wonderful guest. And thank you for letting me know as well. I'm going to say it every week because that's what I have to do. But I do have a book out. It's out in January. It's called You Are Not Alone, January the 19th, 2023. It's everything I've learned from the podcast over these past 6 years and everything I wish I had known at 15 when I joined the club. You can pre-order it now from all the usual places, all the independent places and all the other places as well. And it makes a huge difference to authors if you pre-order. It all counts as the first week of sales. So please, please do pre-order. If you think you're going to probably buy it anyway, I would hugely appreciate it if you got a pre-order in. Thank you so much for listening. This week, I'm talking to the incredible Michelin-starred chef, Tom Kerridge. Tom is an incredible chef. You'll have seen him on The Great British Menu, MasterChef, Saturday Kitchen. You've probably read his cookery books as well. And if you're very lucky, you'll have tasted his food. Tom came in to talk to me about his dad, who, when Tom was 18, died from complications due to MS. So, Tom, who are we remembering today?
My father, my dad.
And what's his name?
Mike Kerridge, Michael Kerridge.
Michael Kerridge is a lovely name. And how long ago was it that Mike died?
He passed away when I was 18, so that's 31 years ago.
Gosh, you were really young then. 18's very young.
Yeah, but he'd been very, very ill for a long time. Mm. So that, it wasn't unexpected. It's probably, yeah, it wasn't unexpected.
So what did Mike pass away of? What happened?
So in the end, it was pneumonia, but he was incredibly, he had multiple sclerosis that point in the 80s and early 90s was very, it was a much misunderstood disease. I think now that there's a lot better ways of controlling it and understanding it. But at the same point, there was obviously no cure. Mm. But yeah, it attacks the nervous system, and he deteriorated from not being able to walk very well to full on electric wheelchair to ending up being completely bedridden with only being able to, I don't know, probably remember 3 or 4 words or sentences that were non-coherent really as well. So there was no form of conversation. There was no. Mm. I first found out that he had it when I was about 9 or 10.
Wow.
So over that 8-year period, but I imagine he must have had it for 2 or 3 years beforehand that we didn't even know about as young kids.
Yeah.
So
do you remember being told, like, oh, your dad has this, or did it just sort of, you know, become up in the house and eventually you sort of picked it up, or did they sit you down and say, this is what's happening?
No, it was actually one of the other kids at school said. Yeah. So it's, I think it comes from when parents know something about other parents, yeah. And then, you know, and kids are rubbish at keeping secrets, aren't they?
Very rubbish, yeah. So someone just said to you, oh, your dad's got this, and you were like, oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea what it was. I think your dad was ill. So then we obviously then have that relatively open conversation at home, but was nothing necessarily to worry about. I mean, more importantly, I think my mum and dad split up. It was an unhappy relationship anyway. So they split up when I was 11.
Wow.
So it ended up, they live in two separate spaces. So it was more concerned as being single parents rather than my father's illness was the issue at first. As a child, you don't seem to, you know, the illness, you don't know kind of what it is or what it's going to do or the connotations of it or have even any understanding of it. So, yeah, as a moving forward thing, it was, or as for a kid to deal with, it was much more of the split up of the family unit, so to speak.
Yeah, of course. That must have been something very tangible as a kid. Like, oh, they've split up. I can see that. Whereas something like, I had a friend when I was at school whose mum had MS and was ill for a very long time. And I remember it being a very, like, confusing thing as kids of like, oh, right, yeah, she's ill. But no one really knew, you know, we just knew that she couldn't do stuff that the other mum could do. And then eventually she was in a wheelchair, the same situation. And it was a very sort of, I guess almost, it's not quite right, but like almost Victorian in that you don't quite know what it means. Like, you just know that that parent is very sick and they can't get up and do those things. Whereas when a parent is separating, as you said, that's a very like obvious thing for a kid to get their head around. Oh, this is happening.
It's also quite hard to understand, I think, for a child to explain the difference between different illnesses and what it does. And, you know, and also, should kids be worrying about it?
Yeah.
Should you really be worried about the idiosyncrasies of different illnesses? You know, it's just a thing, isn't it? You know, trying to explain, I think, for a child's point of view, I kind of get why my parents went down that route. I mean, it was more about being unhappy in the first place, I think, between the two of them that makes it, that's the effect that it has on you as a child. But I also think the split up doesn't affect or didn't affect myself or my brother, I don't think, as bad as our parents thought it might. Or, and I think when parents and people go through that situation about splitting up or not, and they worry about how it'll affect the kids, I think actually you'll find kids are more resilient than you think. You worry about them because obviously as a parent you worry that you don't want anything to have an adverse effect on them. But I think, you know, from my own experience, it wasn't too much of an issue. It was, as long as you felt that the parents loved you, it didn't matter if they loved each other, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think it becomes, okay, you know, my brother's gone through the same situation now. He's separated from his wife over the last 3 years and he's got a son the same age as my son, and like, it's absolutely not affected him at all. They, you know, they stay at different parents' houses throughout the week. There's no issue. So yeah. I think you kind of, parents, you guard yourself much more than you think. I think kids are quite resilient.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, especially as you said, it's been unhappy. It tends to be children just want it to be happy, don't they? They just want parents to be happy. And if that situation is then resolved by a separation, then that's, you know, I think children are quite practical. Like, great, let's do that then. That's what's going to make everyone happy. So was he living by himself towards the end? What happened as he, you know,
he was in a care, he was in a nursing home towards the end. So when they first separated, he was with a different partner. And then as that progressively got worse, his mum, my grandmother, they ended up buying a small accessible bungalow that's wheelchair accessible, and a special car and whatever with the winch and things to get people in and out. And then it ended up getting to the point where the care system, we couldn't get to the point where being at home was the wrong place to be. So he ended up going into a nursing home and then stayed in a small space, had his own room, but was unable to move, like completely incapacitated. So it was over that period of time, and yeah, it progressively got worse. So yeah, at the end, he was in a room in a nursing home. That was it.
And were you with him when he passed away?
No. We would see him. We'd go and see him maybe once or twice a week. Friday evenings were the evenings, kind of after school. You pop round and see your dad for a couple of hours. But they were not pointless. I mean, you could see he was kind of pleased to see us, or you could tell probably, but I don't really know. There was no form of communication. There wasn't anything really. So we both myself and my brother went with him. We got a phone call the next morning from the nursing home saying that he passed away in the night.
God, that must have been so difficult. And especially, so my dad died when I was 15, why I do this show. And
yeah.
And I remember vividly feeling like I was living in a different world to the other teenagers. And I wonder if that's how you felt, like 18-year-old lad, of like having to visit your dad on a Friday evening and not being able to communicate. Did you feel like you were visiting a place that not everybody was having to deal with?
Do you know what? It's kind of... I'll be 100% honest with you. It feels like everything about my life is kind of summed up from that point, from it being... My life is relatively... It's just a life of extremes, and it still is now as a 49-year-old man. Everything about it is extreme. And where we grew up, being a single-parent family, was not abnormal. Mm. It was fairly standard. Most, I would say 50% of the kids that I grew up with were, you know, either lived with their mum or their dad, or were, you know, in slightly troubled or different backgrounds, you know, homes that were a bit more broken or fractured, or a huge family unit where everybody lived in the same house. It was kind of like that sort of environment. That's where we grew up. So it wasn't a weird thing that we were living with single parents. So going to visit your other parent wasn't a different thing. But going to visit your other parent, but in a nursing home, so it was the next level. It was the next thing. And then, yeah, when he passed away, yeah, we were the only people in our group of friends whose parents, one of our parents had passed away from that early age. And it just... Because he was very ill, it wasn't sudden, it wasn't in a car crash, it wasn't something that was unexpected, it wasn't something that just happened, it wasn't a heart attack that was it, all gone, 1 minute is there, next minute is gone. Because he was in this deteriorating state, that you then get to the point where it passes away. It wasn't not unexpected, but it was, it came as a shock. I mean, but at the same point, we weren't really connected into it as a family anyway. So it's just... I did, but it does make you, I think it definitely hardens you. I mean, you'll know yourself, you know, it definitely puts you into a mental state that you have to learn to cope with, and you have to be able to be very solid about it and quite grounded and quite understanding. And I think you end up being it sounds weird, but in a way, it's been quite, not a blessing, but it's been very easy to deal with other deaths that happen within families or with other friends and their families, or like the understanding of going through that from such a young age, it's not a surprise.
Yeah.
It's not a thing that is, it's been a part of my life, somebody dying quite young. Because a lot of people don't normally have to face that until maybe they're our age nearly 50. You go, you know, that's when parents and grandparents start becoming ill, or people in your social group that you know may have some form of proper illness. You know, you don't normally have to deal with that until, I don't think, your late 40s. Death isn't normally a thing that you start having to associate with stuff. So it's quite, in some ways, I do see it as not a privilege, but a weird kind of life skill. We're here for, you know, they help build and form characters, don't they?
Yeah. And we said that a lot on the show, and a lot of people who, what we refer to as like the teenage grief club of like, when you join, or the joke I always say is like, everyone gets here eventually, I just got here early, I'm just laying out the twiglets, like, because I'm here early, but everyone will get here. And it's not that you're glad it happened, it's just there are weird positives to it happening. So it's not like you would go, oh, yes, that life, please. That one where I have to understand death really early and deal with all this pain. But it does harden you, strengthen you, make all the other stuff seem very unimportant, you know, which I think is like you said, is it's a weird lesson to learn so early, and sometimes that can be very painful, but also comes with this other stuff that isn't painful, like when your friends are stressing about what to wear on a Friday or like who they're gonna see, and you're like, well, we're all gonna die, so I don't really mind. Like, it just makes everything a little bit clearer. So yeah, I completely understand that feeling. And as you said, because he was ill for so long, it wasn't like it came out of nowhere. But it's funny, isn't it, because I've spoken to so many people, and even if the illness has been, you know, someone's been ill for like 25 years, still when they die, it's still a bit of a shock. Even though all your brain knew is definitely going to happen, there is that moment of like, oh, right, now they really are gone. This is the door has really closed. And you understand what finality really means, which I think a lot of people, she said, don't find out till they're in their late 40s. What was the funeral like? Did you speak at it, or do you remember it particularly? Or
no, I didn't speak at it. It was there was a few people there. It was a cremation at cemetery in Gloucester, and there was a few people there, and then we scattered the ashes at the cemetery. So it's kind of like I don't know. My dad wasn't particularly. I mean, he wasn't a social creature. He was somebody that was quite. As an introverted character, in terms of his, it wasn't that he didn't like people. He wasn't part of, he didn't have a huge social group. He had a few friends and a few people that were around him and a smaller family. He was an only child. So there was no, he had no brothers or sisters. So it was kind of like so he came from a small family. His mum, his father, but they both passed away before he died. So it was quite the funeral was quite weird in a lot of ways, because I think a lot of people there were from my mum's side, and even though they'd separated and divorced, you know, like 7 or 8 years earlier, it was kind of like quite a weird, it was quite a weird vibe. I mean, funeral is a weird vibe anyway. I think it's a weird, if you're 18 and your brother is 15 and the two of us are there, it's just quite a weird vibe, isn't it? You know?
Oh my goodness, it's not, yeah.
And also, I don't know, it's not put together as a celebration. We've grown much more now in this country of celebrated life, haven't we? I think the way that funerals have moved to being remembering with sadness has now moved to, you know, all the latest funerals I've been to have all been about celebrating life. They're very sad, but it's actually a reflection of someone's top points of their personality and the experiences that they've done and the things that they've had and what they've achieved and all those sort of things. I think in the early 90s and late 80s, I think it was much more, there was much more kind of like, when you mentioned that Victorian style, kind of like, it's kind of, it was more a reflection of sadness and grief, but I don't know, it was just kind of weird. I mean, it was, they're weird anyway. And I think if it's the funeral of one of your parents and your teenagers, it's quite a hard, it's quite hard to, like, emotionally, it's a difficult time anyway. Being a teenager is a nightmare, isn't it?
It's so hard. And it's interesting because I was 15 when my dad died. My brother was 19. So it's like similar to you and your brother. And I remember like my dad's funeral, like, just feeling very, as if I was sort of not at a party, but like, you know what I mean? Just like sort of saying hello to people and being polite and, oh, right, yes. And then in the background being like, oh yeah, my dad is dead over there. Like, your brain can't really process it. I think it's such a huge thing. And I think also we've talked about this on the show that the adults are looking at you in a very sad way because they can see an 18-year-old, a 15-year-old, but when you're that age, you think, well, I'm a grown-up, so I am on the same level as all these grown-ups. But you're not. Obviously, you're still so young at that age, and they're looking at you with that sadness of, oh, you've lost your parent. But you're sort of feeling like, I remember thinking like, well, he was quite old. Like, even though my poor dad was only 44, but I'm thinking, well, he was old. Yeah, 40s, it's pretty old. And it took me years to get older to see a 15-year-old from that perspective and be like, oh God, I was really young. I didn't really understand. It is
a little patronizing though. I think to look back and feel sorry for you, like as an adult now, if I was an adult now and to think, oh, poor them. Well, actually, Yeah, it's very sad for everybody, right? Yeah. For everybody, no matter how you're connected to your father or my father or whatever, you know, it's sad for someone. But at the same point, that's helped make you that person, you know, that strength, that. So I get it if you're 5 or 6 and how you're going to grow up without a parent. But then maybe another parent comes along. You know, I think we all deal with that sadness in a slightly different way. And I get it if you're a grown up and an adult and you're looking at it and you haven't experienced what we've been through.
Mm.
And you look at somebody and you think, you know, oh, that must be so sad and horrible for them. But actually that experience, it is really sad and it is really horrible. But when you're there, you, like you say, you're slightly removed from it.
Yeah.
And you're trying to work out how you're going to build from it and how you're going to get on with it and how you're connected to it, because it isn't your wife, right, or husband. It isn't your other half. It is a figure, a father figure of somebody that was there, or somebody. I think everybody deals with it slightly differently, but I do think that, you know, and we talked about it earlier, kids are quite resilient, and I think even as teenagers, these are things that happen in your life that help structure and build you into being something else. So yes, feel sadness, but don't necessarily feel patronizingly sorry for somebody, because this will be in the future, 15, 20 years time, a thing that has helped structure them into being a position of wherever they're at. It's a massive bar of mental strength and resilience that will come in, a life experience that not many other people get. You know, it's something that, you know, it's not an opportunity, but it is a layer of something and a layer of your personality and a layer of your strength of character that not many other people will get to understand, experience, or have.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. And I've definitely felt that as I've got older, of people being like, oh God, that's so awful when you tell them. And you think, well, I mean, I'm all right. I'm okay. I remember I did a gig once with someone and they told this story of like that they had been very sick and obviously that was awful, and they had imagined their child growing up without them and how awful it would have been for their child not to have them as a teenager and not to know that they you know, went to university and all this stuff. I remember sitting there thinking, oh, well, that's my life. And I remember thinking, wow, your worst nightmare, this man was sort of saying, oh God, thank God I didn't die, which obviously, thank God he didn't die, but was his worst nightmare was my life. And I sort of thought, oh, it's funny, isn't it? Because there you are telling everyone, imagine if my children had to go through that. And here I am being the child that went through that. And I'm all right. Like, obviously, as you said, it's the two things are true. I think that sometimes what's difficult with grief is like, I have been so sad and it has been so hard and there's been so much pain. But at the same time, I'm all right. Like, I've been okay.
Yeah.
And it has been such a strength. Definitely, definitely. I can't undo it from who I am today. It really does. It's a fundamental like part of who I am that I went through that experience and that I learned that lesson. As I said, equally, I wouldn't have like picked it off the shelf as choice number one for things to do at 15. But you don't have a say. And if you don't have a say, you kind of make the best of these situations that come to you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week.
Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So you were just 18 when you've gone through all this. When did you start sort of moving into the career that you have now? Did that come very quickly? Do you feel like the grief drove you into like, right, I know what I want to do with my life? Or did you have those years of like, oh God, who am I? What does this mean?
No, I was very lucky. I ended up in a kitchen around about 18.
Wow.
And just being this, ended up, an industry that found me, and which is great. You know, I walked in there, and it's weird. I talk about it lots of times about kitchens and feeling that it's a little bit like a pirate ship, that there's lots of wastes and strays of societies and people that are slightly left field way of thinking. And, you know, it's an alien environment to many people, you know. You know, kitchens are like the insides of submarines, or they're kind of like, it's a different environment. It's a work zone that if you walk into and you don't know what's going on, it can be quite daunting and quite terrifying and quite, and it is full of like slightly, I suppose, not society dropouts, although there can be a lot of them in kitchens, but people that deal with life in a very different way. You know, yeah. It's well documented the amount of substance abuse, alcohol, drugs, whether some form of addiction issues. The type of people that sometimes find themselves in kitchens or working in hospitality. But that's because everybody's welcome. It's an industry that is embraced by, you provide the excitement, the going out for people with dull, mundane, everyday lives that then on a weekend go out to restaurants or go out to bars or clubs or go out to whatever else. And if you're in hospitality, you know, people come to your hotel, they stay there for weekends or getaways or holidays or whatever, and you're providing that environment of fun. But then if you're in that environment of fun your whole life, you're then already sucked into this world that is about slightly excessive fun times, people being there when if you've got a kind of a mindset of wanting to play hard, work hard, do the, like, it's an environment that embraces everybody, and it doesn't matter on your background, whether it's economic, social, sexuality, race, religion, none of it matters in the industry. Hospitality is the most embracing, the most eclectic mix of people that it. But you can see very easily the formed career paths as well. You can see there's so much structure to through beginning at the bottom and making your way to management. You can understand it and you can see it not in one particular business. You can see it all throughout the levels of hotels. You know, you've got 2, 3, 4, 5 star hotels. You've got no Michelin stars, 1, 2, and 3 Michelin star restaurants. You've got, you know, you can see there's that kind of infrastructure. So it's very easy to read and be a part of it. And I think that industry, when I walked into it as an 18-year-old, I just suddenly felt a part of something that was left field, something different, which was very similar to my teenage years growing up with my dad being very ill and passing away early. I was the only person, I'm the only one that went from my school into being a cook, or particularly in my year that I know of, you know, that everybody else ended up being a builder or working in offices, or, you know, there's another friend of mine who has this, not quite the same background, but is also slightly removed. Like, he ended up being a professional sportsman, and then my other mate, the three of us, he ended up being a professional, he was an actor and performer. So the three of us ended up in slightly different careers. Like, the three best mates ended up in three different roles or jobs that weren't the norm. If you sat down with your careers advisor in 1986 and said, what shall I be? You know, you were told, I mean, I was told I should be a prison warder or a beauty therapist if I was female. And it was just kind of like, that's such 80s kind of infrastructure. And it was just like, and that's because I think there was probably a shortness of prison warders during the 80s. Yeah. So it was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, and they would just be like pushed into, they weren't aspirational. They weren't ever about it being career or life driven. They were about a job.
Yeah.
It wasn't about it being some form of life that you want. It wasn't about entrepreneurial spirit. It wasn't about backing yourself and believing in yourself and becoming something. It was always about, okay, what gaps need filling? What jobs should these people do? So the hospitality industry is one that all of a sudden you can see, if you go, oh, well, I want to do quite well at something and I can see how well I'll do at this. And also the environment is really good fun. So that was about the same age, yeah, that I walked into that industry.
It's interesting, I guess, that you, yeah, I just think it's interesting, you know, you said your dad passed away at 18 and then the hospitality industry was there almost providing, like you said, a slightly unusual family arrangement of like everybody welcome. This is the you know, underneath the ship, this is where we all are. It all doesn't matter what you're going through. And I wonder if you felt like that was a place where you could have your grief and perhaps nobody would, you know what I mean? You could just, you could be there with that pain and no one was going to question it or bother you about it. Like everybody else had equally interesting, bizarre stories that had led them to there. Or am I being, am I jumping into
it? Yeah, no, I don't, no, I think it's, the weird thing is I don't think I've grieved about it at all.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't think, I was sad about it, but I didn't, I don't think I've ever grieved about it.
Wow.
I don't think, it's not been a thing. It's been something that, it's something that's happened in my life that I've put into a certain space. Do you know what? Now, I feel more sad about it now than I did when I was 18, I think, and growing up and becoming part of that person, because he was very ill. So it wasn't like he was living a life that was suddenly taken away. I wasn't necessarily connected to him in any way because his illness, and also he was separated as a family, and he wasn't necessarily the best husband, I don't think. But it's only now that I feel a bit sadder about it. But that's because now I'm a dad and I reflect on the points of, you know, like you were talking about the guest that you're, the person that you were talking to previously, that thank God I didn't die, and you, because you're living, you imagine it being the dad, not the kid. You know, you imagine being the dad. I don't want to miss, see, if I was in the same situation, I don't want to miss my little man growing up. I don't want to miss all those things, all the stuff that I've been able to do and achieve and been able to build businesses and create and experience that I had. My dad had no idea that I was going to do any of it. Like, he had no sense that I was going to do any of it, and has no, you know, and has never been able to see it. And you go, I only imagine it now being a parent thinking that, my God, I am going, I'm going to die. This is inevitable. This is something that's going to happen. But the only bit that I don't want to miss out on is me experiencing what they're going to do. Do you know what I mean? So it's only now, I think, as being a parent, that I can reflect on it in sadness. And that's only because I can imagine what it must have been like for him. I don't know what his mental state was like, because he was in no space to be able to communicate or say. So you don't really know any of it, but you can only imagine, can't you? So it's only now that I think back to it and I think, okay, well, if he was fully capacitated in the mind, but the rest of it wasn't working, it must have been incredibly hard and difficult and sad just from a parenting point of view.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting, again, all the stuff I've read about the teenage club is that you don't grieve for quite a long time. And I definitely experienced that. It took me to my 30s before I could even look at it, because I think you're in this place where something happened to you when you were so young that you didn't really have, like you said, you're sort of removed from it, you don't have the vocabulary for it, it's a very confusing thing. And I definitely spent like my 20s running away from it, or just being like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just a thing that happened, no big deal. And then by the time I got to my 30s, I was like, oh, I think it mattered. I think I might need to think about that. And I've got two kids, and that has been a huge extra part of the grief for me, of like that sort of, you sort of go into another room, you know, and you're like, oh, I see, this is what it looks like from the parenting point of view. And as you said, for your dad to not know what you were then, you know, the huge achievements that you've had and the huge success and the creativity that's come from, like you said, that 18-year-old just going into the kitchen and being like, oh, right, wow, what's this? Oh, okay. And it's really, it's such a sadness that they, that's the thing, this double-edged sword that is losing a parent, of like, it gives you so much strength, but the other edge to it is there's a sadness. They didn't know. They don't know. They don't get to see all these things and they don't get to experience that. And yeah, it's just, there's nothing you can do about it, is it? It's just, that's the truth of it.
It is life. It makes it very hard. It makes it very hard. The reality, every day someone dies. You know, every day someone is dying. Every day someone is going through this process. Every day someone, and if you dwell on the sadness of it, of going, oh, they didn't get to see this, or they didn't experience that, or they didn't. No, they didn't. But there, I mean, there is absolutely nothing you can do, and you can't live in the past. And I think that is one of the bonuses of it happening. If you're like you say, the teenage club when it happens, I think it's quite easy because you've got so much in front of you.
Yeah.
So you're always looking forward. You're not looking at, I'll never be able to do that again, or I'll never be able to see this again, or I'll never be able. You can look in front of you, and if you have a positive mindset, if you're a person with the outlook of life that, you know, the glass is half full rather than half empty, it can be, you know, something that helps build and strengthen character, and it is positivity of looking forward. But there is nothing you can do about it. No. You can't bring somebody back. It's happened. It's there. You can feel the sadness from it, but I really don't think you can't dwell on it forever, I don't think.
Mm. How have you felt with your son? Have you talked about your dad in that way, or has that been sort of like two separate parts of your trying to, yeah, you know, connect him back to who you must remember him when you were little, obviously before he got sick?
Yeah, no, well, I do, but also because the relationship between my mum and dad was quite strained, there wasn't really a father figure at all in that point of view. Okay. It wasn't like we weren't taken to football matches or gone to rugby training or done whatever. All of that happened the moment they separated, when mum and then engaged in much more of everything else that we did. So, but also he was ill. You know, there's so many different things you can look back on the problems that that's a different story. You know, that's a whole different story of my mum and dad's relationship. It's something that's very different than how that affects you as a child. Like, that's probably more effective than him being ill. But yeah, we have talked about it with AC. He asks because obviously, so Beth's dad is still alive. Beth's granddad is still, you know, and very active and running around and whatever. So there's much more of a connection into an understanding of Beth's dad or granddad. So AC does ask about my dad and what was he like? When did he die? And it's weird because he's 6 years old. And the question about death comes up quite a lot. It's a thing I think that they're beginning to engage with or understand, you know, whether it's through watching cartoons or what, you know. One of the first things that my mum always talks about or laughs about with the first experience of death is when she watched Bambi, you know, like in the opening bit where Bambi's mum gets it. Like, it's just like, I mean, it's quite a dark
thing.
Yeah,
you can't watch that now. It's not okay now. It was fine when we were kids. So now it's not okay.
It's kind of like, so I think at that point, he's beginning to understand a little bit that people are around forever. And he does talk about it and has asked about it. And does trying to understand family, because my family is still quite big. My brother's almost remarried, and so he's got four kids. And then there's a conversation with that. And then Beth's side of the family, she's got a sister and a brother, and the sister's got two kids. And there's a much bigger family connotation. We'll all go on holidays together. We all do, you know, we do lots of things together. So just trying to piece together. He's trying to piece together. Yeah. Where my dad would have fitted in that jigsaw or in that conversation. And I think, I mean, that's healthy. And we talk about it. And I say he wasn't very well. He was very ill for a long time. So, you know, the understanding, which is good, because at some point in his life, he's going to have an understanding that somebody is not very well. And someone's going to part. Before he's my age, somebody he knows, or someone's parent he knows, or somebody somewhere along the lines, you know, he will encounter some form of death, won't he?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to be a grandparent. It's going to be a whatever. Like, so the understanding of it is something that happens. So having that conversation with him, I think, is healthy in a good way. You know, talking about the past of somebody being there, and he passed away when I was quite young. And
yeah, I interviewed Michael Rosen, and he described, like, the nicest description I found of, like, what kids do is that they're trying to sort, in the same way that they, like, oh, all the pencils go in here. And then, like, they're like, well, I'm a pencil, where do I go? So where's my dad? So where's your dad? Because they want to see where everything fits. And I thought that's such a nice way of making it not scary, because obviously my daughter, same, she only has one grandparent, my mum. And, you know, someone, her friend was talking about her granddad. She was like, oh, I don't have a granddad. Where's my granddad? And, you know, you just have those conversations. And I agree with you. I think the more you can have them now in a kind of light, positive way where it's not, oh, somebody's just died, I think is a really good thing, that they are aware of it before it, you know, they're like, what is death? And the more you try and hide them from it, you know, it doesn't make sense, even though I don't know if watching Bambi is quite the way to do it these days.
I mean, to be honest, since Ace has been with us, I mean, we've had the death of two dogs in 6 years. Well, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So we kind of, like, the understanding of that, he's very good with understanding that the circle of life. I quite, you know, he's very good with animals.
Yeah.
And he loves animals and he loves watching animal videos, but he also loves watching, like, quite horrific animal videos of things like lions attacking gazelles. And they're just like, just the understanding of the process of it all. And then living through the process of having to have one dog put down and one passing away in the night. Very old. They were both, one was very ill. And one was just really, really, really old.
Oh, bless.
And you just go, but he was very good at dealing with it.
Yeah.
Because I think we've been quite open with those conversations.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's just a good way of dealing with it, I think. You don't want it to be a shock to the system. No. Like, I'm quite good at dealing with death and the situations of it, because I think just because of the experience, that shared experience that we've had, you know, I think you become quite... You've almost got like a force field up, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've almost got like this some sort of superpower.
Yeah.
Because we earned it quite early doors.
I definitely think, as you said, as you get older and you have friends who are more shocked by it, and you're like, oh yeah, of course they died. Like, if they're like, oh my God, so-and-so died, you're like, yeah, that's what happens. And I'm terrible for if somebody survives something, if someone's ill and they're like, oh, they're actually okay, I'm like, are they? Oh, I thought they were gonna die. I'm much more like, oh, all right, people survive something. And yeah, you said it, the force field is a nice way of thinking of it. It does it definitely gives you that strength.
It's a superpower.
Yeah, I know. So a lot of people have referred to it as that. And if you can see it like that, I think that's brilliant, because it's a very painful thing for a lot of people. And if you can find, as you said, as you clearly have, that positiveness to it and the strength to it, I think it's very helpful to get through it. And when you do lose someone young, like you said, you've got a whole future to get through. So you do need to prep yourself for it. Tom, thank you so much for talking to me about Mike and about your experiences with grief and death. I really, really appreciate it. It was so lovely. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, mate. No worries. Thanks for having us on.
Tom's book, Real Life Recipes, is out now and is full of amazing, delicious looking food. You can find more information about Tom if you head to his website, tomkerridge.com. That's K-E-R-R-I-D-G. The show was recorded remotely. It was edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. Artwork by Jade Perkin. The book, as I said, is available to pre-order now. It's called You Are Not Alone, and you can pre-order it from all good bookstores, the good ones, the big ones, the small ones. And remember, as the book says, you are not alone. Thank you for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.